Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the Frontier Beyond Fear radio program. I'm Susan Laris and Danz, broadcasting to you from the beautiful Pacific Northwest. We have a beautiful sunny day here today, and actually had some snow here the last few days, which is somewhat unusual, but does happen here. Today, I'm talking with someone who is actually an old friend who showed up on my path during a very key part of my own awakening. And his name is Ross Blaine. Ross is a master energy medicine practitioner, tough word to say. And he's also a visionary entrepreneur. And Ross has studied several shamanic traditions, Native American, Mesoamerican, South American spirituality. He's also studied paganism, and he's studied just several different schools of thought that many would maybe characterize within the New Age movement, but also since that term that we've talked about several times is very, very difficult to define. What we really are bringing in with Ross are some teachings that come from shamanic traditions, which should be very interesting for us today. And he has actually studied in Peru with Andean shamans. And I first met Ross at a discussion group many years ago where we were talking about the teachings of Don Miguel Ruiz, who wrote the Four Agreements. And that was a very eye-opening experience for me. And at the time, Ross would occasionally bring people to a local medicine wheel. This was back in the days when I lived in Kansas, which is where I met Ross. So anyway, before I bring Ross on, I do want to let you know that there is a chat room open for today's show, and you are welcome to come in there. We do share questions and comments from the chat without identifying full names, if you do have a full name in the chat. There's also a call-in number for today's show, which is 310-807-5104. Today we're running for an hour. I know sometimes we run a little bit longer than that. So as time and the conversation allows, if there are any phone calls, we'll see if we can bring them into the conversation. So I would like to welcome my friend, and who really was an important mentor for me early on, Ross Blaine. Welcome, Ross.
Thank you, Susan. Thank you. It's good morning, I guess, on the West Coast, and
that's
good
great
afternoon to those in the middle and to the East. But it's
right,
really a pleasure to sit in today and visit with you.
Thanks, Ross. And, you know, we could even have listeners worldwide on Blog Talk Radio. So you never know. There could even be people down in some of the regions where you've even studied. So that's one of the reasons I like Blog Talk Radio and all online formats, is that we've truly become a global community. And I do welcome listeners that are in the archive. We have a lot of listeners in the archive for this show. And I think maybe one of the first things Ross and I can talk about, which I've mentioned a few times, is the nature of time. And for me, and you can verify if this is true for you too, Ross, to me, the energy of those listeners who are listening technically in the future is very much present in this current moment.
I agree, and this concept, actually working with time, it's really difficult to get your head around it, because what we're taught actually is that everything, all things are occurring in the now, in the present. So all the eventualities, all the things that we think of as happening in the future and even in the past, in a cosmic way, are actually occurring in the present. And so, yeah, we can connect to that energy. And even in saying that, it's just so hard, since we live in linear time, it's really just so hard to grasp.
You know, it's funny, but I'm not sure how I managed to do it, but even as a child, I seem to have this concept of having conversations with my future self, as if that moment was present, even, you know, when I was maybe, I don't know, I probably started this when I was 10 years old, where I could feel the presence of an older, wiser me, which I think is probably pretty unusual for a child, but I guess I wasn't necessarily a typical child. Although then again, you know, children, they have access to a lot of things that we often forget when we go into adulthood.
Yeah, it's the blessing of being a child. And as you know from Don Miguel Ruiz's teaching, that part of what occurs through childhood and as we are into adulthood is a domestication, where really some of the magic or the mystery of your experience is kind of taught out of you.
Yeah, he talks about the dream of the planet and how we take that on and internalize it, and it's not really true. And I think maybe as children, we can see far more clearly. And yes, thanks for reminding me of that, Ross. It's been a while since I probably should pick up his books again, because I know he has a new one, actually. Have you read the new book by Don Miguel Ruiz? I think he has The Fifth Agreement now.
Yeah, I had my hands on the book, I guess, enough to read The Fifth Agreement. I didn't read the whole book, but most of it is kind of a recapitulation of the old material, and then adding a fifth agreement. I can't even recall what the fifth agreement is at this moment.
Well, I didn't read the book yet, so, you know, it's funny. Our paths are always a journey, and it's not that we forget about teachers, but, you know, we all have to work it in the proper timing to familiarize ourselves with what's going on. And it's almost impossible anymore to read everything, or even really for me, a pretty small percentage of what's being published right now, just because, you know, as you get engaged in your own work, and it's engaging me more and more these days, I try to be aware of what's going on, but there isn't quite the time that I used to have to keep up on everything. But anyway, Ross, one thing you can do for us right at the start, because we have a very diverse spiritual audience for this show, is the term shaman is one that for some may even be a little bit frightening. They may associate it with the occult, which is a term we actually use. I know you had said that part of your path is studying the occult. And I think maybe right from the start, we should define what that means, and whether people should be frightened by it. And also, you know, I think it's a very broad term. So, and also how you got involved in this path. When did you first start pursuing shamanic studies?
Yeah, okay. We'll start with just a kind of a basic definition of shaman. And the word, actually, shaman comes to us from the Tungus people in Siberia, which is an indigenous group that live up in the northern part of Siberia. And the word essentially means, or it's essentially representative of the shaman, the one who travels in the spiritual realms or journeys into the spiritual realm, typically for the purpose of healing and or otherwise helping the tribe or the group where the shaman lives. And so we could relate this very much to, like, in Native American tradition, we speak of the medicine man or the medicine woman. And really, that's the same thing. So, you know, this word shaman now is kind of used as an umbrella term for a tradition of indigenous healing and or divination, seeing. And it's kind of applied now to all indigenous teachings. Interestingly, each of the when you study these cultures, they all have a name for that person, and it's not usually shaman, but I think today we use that word kind of cross-culturally. For example, in Peru, the medicine men and women that I've worked with call themselves pacos, paco. And then in the northern part of Peru, they're called curanderos. So it's, I think, so a lot of times the word shaman is kind of misunderstood, but really it's just an umbrella term borrowed from a specific group that means medicine person or healer.
I sometimes wonder if the reason why some of these terms people associate with fear-based things is simply because culturally there was certainly a time when there were conquerors within our culture of these peoples. And, you know, they did demonize anything that came from their indigenous spirituality. And, you know, one of my own journeys in life, having come from a more conservative background originally, is to release what really was a dream of the planet imposed on me, to use a Don Miguel Ruiz term, in terms of, you know, what of this is real, what these judgments, some of them are cultural and go back many, many years, but they're not real. How long the different shamans that you studied with, within their cultures, how far back does that tradition go, as far as you know?
Well, I think it goes back to the origin of people in those areas. So when you talk about Peru, we normally think of people that migrated across the Bering Strait from the Indus Valley into the Alaska region and then populated North America, moving north to south some 10,000 years ago. There's also evidence in South America that Polynesian people, and maybe people even from older civilizations than that, may have populated some of those regions as well. So, yeah, really these teachings and these ways simply are indigenous to those people. It goes back to the beginning of their time. And it's, you know, and you mentioned the conquerors, and, you know, a lot of these people now are Christian. So even some of the traditional healers are Catholic, for example, in Peru. And they sort of blend those things because, obviously, Spain settled that area and was a Catholic tradition. And so they actually are able to hold the new faith or the new ways kind of along with the old ones, and there's a blending to some degree. Now, this I'm speaking in wide, you know, casting a wide net, because not everyone there has that paradigm. But one of the things about, like, Christianity and the settling of North and South America, one reason why the Indians were so comfortable taking on Christianity is because the cosmology of their faith or their religion was very similar. They believe in a creator God, the Great Spirit or the Creator, and they were easily and they believe in manifestations of that in spiritual people that and avatars. And so when a cosmology was introduced that said, here's a creator God we call God, and here is God's son Jesus, who's this great extension of that, an avatar and teacher, they're like, great, we can accept that. And so it's really, not, we always think of things being different and separate, but in truth, there's more similarity than there is difference.
Well, I often feel that the Great Spirit, the universe, God, however you label it, reaches us similarly. And I'm not, the more on my own path that I study these things, the more amazed I am at some of the similarities between traditions, even, some more detailed things that always continually astound me as to how similar. Now, the topic of today's show actually relates to conversations that have been going on this show in the past. We often ask challenging questions that I will tell you so many times I've participated in a lot of Christian forums where they always say that New Agers, grouping that group together, believe that God is a neutral energy field. Now, I will say that for me, depending on how you characterize that, I've been really thinking about this in preparation for today's show. There is a personal relationship with love, and certainly Christians are taught that within the context of their faith, that makes it difficult for me to view it quite that way. And I know that's true for other people. And what I'd like you to do, because you've written quite a bit on this topic, I'd like you to explain it from your point of view, as well as from the shamanic tradition, including this idea of light energy and heavy energy. And also tell me if believing this way disables this concept of a personal relationship with a divine, with a loving divine. How are you able to connect to the divine in that way and still believe in energy the way you do? So if you could take on that big question, because we've been talking about it on and off on this show for a few episodes now.
Okay, I'll do my best. well, I like you and like many others, I too struggle with this question. And in fact, I recently had a conversation with two different people on this very topic. And both conversations kind of took us to a place where we weren't sure. There's this question of God being a good force or a positive force, or I think sometimes of a cosmological good and evil that exists. And so when I posed the question, what if God, what we call God, what we all agree is the creative force, what if that's really just neutral energy, that we can call it love? It is the energy that creates the world and creates us and creates everything that we experience. And of course, that seems like a loving thing. But beyond that, what if that's what God is just a neutral energy, and and the subject or the idea of good and evil and the opposite of that really comes into play through the experience of humanity, where humanity sees things as in a duality, black, white, red, blue, Republican, Democrat. I mean, increasingly, especially now, we're seeing everything in this duality term or duality paradigm. And we even project that back onto God, where we see God at one point acting good or kind, and then there's a punishing, menacing God who's unkind. But really, isn't that just humanity making a judgment about the creation? So it's very interesting. I can say this from a shamanic point of view, what I've learned from indigenous healers that I've worked with. Really, there's two kinds of energy. And everything, by the way, is energy when you take it down to the quantum level. And essentially, there's two kinds. There's an energy that feeds, that is that creative force that they call that feeds you or feeds the creation. And then there's an energy that's heavy. So there's a light energy that feeds, that is beneficial, that we actually engage with and help sustain life. And then the other energy is heavy energy. And what they say is that the light energy is what's in the cosmos. It's what we're all made of, what God is, and that the heavy energy is really created on the earth by human beings. And so then you look at nature and you wonder, well, if an eagle eats a squirrel, you know, is what's happening there? Is there heaviness involved? Is that creating heavy energy? So again, I think we tend to project our view as human beings onto even the natural order of things. And in reality, what's happening between an eagle and a squirrel is what's naturally meant to happen. And really, there's no judgment about it. The squirrel is the food chain for the eagle. That's just the way of the creation. So that's kind of, in a nutshell, there's light energy that feeds the creation, and then there's heavy energy that essentially is created by human beings. That kind of energy, which is called hucha in Quechuan, is the kind of energy that is problematic and can be the beginning or the auspices for becoming ill, sickness, disease, various things. All have an energetic component that comes from that kind of heavy energy.
Do you feel that the concept of free choice enters into this? This was something that we talked about on another show. And for those of you who've been in the chat room in previous shows, Ross has actually been in the chat a couple times and has contributed, which is one reason I said, come on the show and talk with us. I think a lot of time, you know, coming from this Christian perspective, which is in my background, although I will say that for me, I have learned to reject the traditional concept of good and evil. For me, and again, this is not necessarily the same as how you see it, and that's fine, we all have different perspectives, is certainly where I like to place my faith is that there is a foundation of love that binds us together. However, we have free choice. And, you know, maybe this is just a different way of expressing something similar in the where the love is more like the light energy, which we gravitate towards, but we have free choice to do what we will as human beings. Otherwise, we would be robots down here. And that can express itself as we try to survive, which has been the mode of operation on this planet, as heavier energy, as we make choices that may not be very positive. So that's kind of the way I've begun to think about it, although I don't claim to have 100% confidence in the answer here, I do know, and this is something I'm really curious about, that one of the things that come from the Christian experience that people value the most is having this, what they call a personal relationship. And something I've been reflecting upon, I have to tell you, I didn't really discover that in Christianity, because the darker part of God, that angry part that you referred to, had such a power over me. Every time I turned to something in the Bible, it was about that aspect, that it kind of blocked out the loving aspect, and I couldn't figure out how to have a relationship with that. However, people do, and I often wonder, this came to me this morning, if in more indigenous cultures, that relationship expresses itself through, say, maybe their relationship with their ancestors. I know they talk about that a lot. There is this feeling, a tangible feeling of spirit, loving support. And that's, I was just curious if you could reflect upon that, given your experience with shamans and different cultures.
Of course. Well, first, before I elaborate further on that, I just want to say that what you just described, love being the light, I think that's just a way of re-languaging or languaging the same thing. So I think actually that's completely compatible with what the kind of indigenous paradigm is, that love, that energy, that force of the creation is love. It is the light. It is love. It is good. We can say it is good. Free choice is part of the human condition, and we have the choice in every moment to choose love or to choose the light and act accordingly, or we can choose otherwise. And the choices that choose otherwise, maybe in Christianity, would be called sin. And essentially, that's what creates heavy energy. It is that free choice where you don't choose love. And when you don't choose love, that creates that hucha, that heaviness. And to your question about having a personal relationship with God, very much there is a indigenous paradigm and that's similar. And they call, of course, God Great Spirit or the Great Creator or probably many names. But one way that the shamans I've worked with and indigenous traditions I've studied, the way they engage with spirit, with God, is they experience that through nature and through natural things. So for them, the world is animate, that is, full of life. The mountain is alive, the river is alive, the lake is alive, the sea is alive, as are the salmon and the eagle. And one way they engage with spirit and they have that personal relationship is in their relationship to the land and to the natural setting where they live. So in the Andes, for example, they work with the mountain spirits, what they call the apus. The Apu Kuna, which is means Apu plural. And so when somebody is feeling down, let's say emotionally unwell or depressed, one of the solutions or one of the something they might do is simply go to the mountain. And that just means they actually physically walk up a mountain. And they connect then spiritually and energetically with the mountain, which is an extension of that creative God force, and that helps them be well.
You know, I think that many in our culture were beginning to discover this, and, you know, I find that this is yet another experience of mine as a child, because I grew up in Colorado. And I used to go to camp every year, but I go to Bible camp every year, which was in a natural setting. And, you know, I had to kind of balance some of that out for me. And I would find myself early in the morning going and sitting under a tree. You know, I had a certain spot on the mountain that I like to sit. And I sometimes think back to that. And I think, you know, in many ways, that was some of the most powerful, that was probably the most powerful part of being at camp. I know that at the time, that's not what they would have wanted, and yet it was fascinating that that was my experience. And to be fair, through Christianity, too, they did not discount God's part in creating the beauty of where we were. And so it wasn't totally divorced from that either. I do think it comes in more powerfully through indigenous cultures. I think it's one of the reasons why the movie Avatar so resonated with so many people. In fact, there were even people, they say, who watched that movie. They didn't want to leave that world. They wanted to live in that world. And what was funny is many people would say, you are living in that world. You just don't see it. How do you feel about the movie Avatar, assuming that you did see it? How does that reflect some of these concepts in the popular culture?
Well, I love the movie. You know, it was obviously just great, great film, great entertainment. But that movie did very much convey a certain feeling, and a feeling I think increasingly that people feel lost or disconnected from. And I'll put this in mythical is maybe the right word, but to try to illustrate where we find ourselves as people, as mankind, in our creation story in the Bible, we are living in paradise in the Garden of Eden, and through various events in the garden, man is cast out. Unfortunately, we blame the feminine for that, and consequently, the whole Western paradigm, the Western mindset, is based upon this story, this mythology or true story, however you believe or however you want to hold this. But nevertheless, this is the software, this is the story that informs the whole Western paradigm, that in fact we're out of the garden, we've been kicked out, and we know that there's a cherub and a flaming sword guarding the way back. You can't get back. And you know, when we were kicked out, you know, Eve is told, the feminine is told, that she will suffer in childbirth, and I think Adam and the masculine is told that by the sweat of his brow he will raise thorns and thistles. Interestingly, thorns and thistles, not strawberries and mangoes and, you know, blueberries, but thorns and thistles. So this story really sets up a paradigm where we are separate from creation. Now, the movie Avatar and or an indigenous paradigm is that they don't have that story. They've never left the garden. They are still part of the creation. And whereas we can no longer connect to nature, they still talk to the trees, and they still talk to the rivers, and they speak to the salmon, and they speak to the eagle, and of course I mean that metaphorically, but this is a spiritual connection that they don't have the story of being cast out, so they are still in the garden and the caretakers of the garden. And I think that's what Avatar really captures, is that feeling of being connected to nature, being part of that natural world that I think we all long for.
And I think that's why that movie struck such a chord, and also the destructors of that. You know, there was also that aspect within the movie of those who just can't see it and you know, then choose to destroy it because they can't really see what they're destroying. And, you know, I think of the biblical reference of not knowing what they do, which sometimes I think that's really true, that they don't, they're not fully conscious of just what the consequence of that choice is. And, you know, I want to use this as a little bit of a lead-in to some writings that you've done on 2012, which I feel are quite unique. And given your studies, I think that you would have some interesting things to share about the 2012 prophecies. But also, I know you've written about our being out of balance with the natural world and how that relates to 2012. So if you could express in a nutshell, I know this gets somewhat complex after reading what you wrote on this, how you view 2012 and how it also relates to how we are living in balance with the earth or out of balance with the earth right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first, I want to just say that I don't really know what's going to happen. And so I don't claim to, I write about this and I speculate about it. And even shamanically, spiritually, I try to vision a future that is a positive future. But just like everyone out here, I don't know that anyone knows for sure what 2012 is or what it means. I think 2012, we use that as of course, that's the end of the Mayan long calendar, and it's picked up a lot of interest in recent years, particularly thanks to the Hollywood blockbuster movie that portrayed a negative picture of it. But I guess first, I just view that the time of 2012 is kind of a marker. There's a lot of prophecies that point to this time, the times we live in right now. So 2012 is actually right now, and 2012 will be happening long after the actual date of 12/21/12. So it's more of a marker and a thing pointing to a time frame that we happen to be living in. Relative to some speculation, I wrote a piece that essentially, shortest version I can. We know that that we have some issues in terms of ecology on the earth, or depending on your beliefs, because again, there's a duality here, and there's one side that says there's no global warming or no climate change and everything's great. And then there's another side that says, yes, we believe that maybe there's problems. But we can look at nature and we can look at pollution and many of the things that are going on, deforestation. And I think we come to conclude that I think our population is 6 or maybe even 7 billion now, and that the pressure that we're putting on the natural earth, the resources of the earth and the earth herself, are immense. And as that population grows, as it's expected to, that the natural order of things is beginning to come out of balance. And I think we see that reflected in climate with the advent of more violent hurricanes and earthquakes and storms, etc., snowstorms. And so we're beginning to see unprecedented things that are kind of a reflection of this balance problem. And to take that to 20.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to comment. I don't know if anyone studied this statistically, but it sure seems like volcanoes are getting more active, too, as we get closer to 2012. And then there's the whole concept of the sun, the solar flare cycle. I know Don Miguel Ruiz's organization, they talk about the sixth sun. You know, there was the sixth sun foundation. And what does that exactly mean? So anyway, if you could just kind of maybe reflect on that, too, while you're talking, I'll let you continue.
Sure. Well, actually, you mentioned the sun, and the sun is just now waking up from its inactive period, and we're coming into what they predict is going to be the most active sunspot cycle in hundreds, if not thousands, of years, and nobody's sure exactly what the implication is for the kind of sun activity or solar weather that's predicted throughout this year and into next year. But back to the thought I had about this 2012 and this kind of overall out of balance. It has to do mostly with population. So, and I connect this to the idea of reincarnation, which I know a lot of listeners may or may not believe in, but what I believe is if you accept that reincarnation is possible, that human beings have been incarnating on the earth, and part of the soul purpose, the soul's reason for being here, is to experience itself as kind of God created. And through that process, as a human, we pick up a lot of heavy energy. And if we carry that energy with us after we pass, it's difficult for us to return to the creation, to the creative source, which is heaven or whatever people want to call it. And what happens as a result of that, and this is what the Eastern faith calls karma, is we reincarnate into a new physical human body and we repeat that process, the idea being to heal those things that you carried from past the past life, or in some cases, many past lives, to heal that. And at an energetic level, that's just energy, heavy energy, because that heavy energy prevents you from being able, when you pass from this earth, to go on to back to source or heaven. So you reincarnate, and essentially, the evolution or evolving soul. And long story short, it's possible that as this process is going along, and souls do not return to source, but they continue to reincarnate on the earth, and new souls are also coming in, that's, I think, how you can explain 7 billion human beings living here all at once. So one thought I had about 2012 is that perhaps it's the end of karma, or the end of this reincarnation process, where we have an opportunity right now to kind of clear this once and for all as human beings, and maybe that the door of reincarnation closes and we're not going to be able to come back here and do that again. And that's just simply a correction cosmically to keep the earth in balance, to restore, if you will, a balanced balanced planet.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds a little way out there, but it's hard to explain.
Well, actually, I've heard a similar concept expressed in different ways. Again, it's so fascinating how these themes keep coming up. And I sometimes have trouble, and I've actually expressed this in the show, my empathic, sympathetic heart wants to hope that consciousness, when it expands, will essentially erase what people have viewed as karma for even those people who didn't get it. And suddenly, as part of the awakening, they'll just see that, oh my gosh, that wasn't the right thing to do. We really weren't treating the planet well. Just because it seems like within many of our own lives, on our own journeys, we have awakenings. And so, and I can't know this for sure. That's where I place my hope. Is it that way? I don't know. But I do know there are many parallel theories about this, where one of them comes from what's called the Law of One series, which is becoming popular. I am not an expert on it. Maybe someday I'll get someone on here. But they talk about even this concept of a harvest, that it happens every so often in cycles, and souls that are ready to leave or to get to this next level of consciousness, they make it. And the others, there's no real penalty. They're just not ready. You know, they, and I see that in what you're describing too, in that they still have exercises to do. And where it varies is whether this exercise, you know, whether the people who have ascended will either stay on the earth or leave. That goes, you see both. I mean, in some theories, the people who have ascended, which is often the language, will leave the earth, and the people who are not ready will stay on the earth. And, you know, there's even a parallel within Christianity. I mean, there's the whole concept of left behind, the rapture. In fact, we've talked about that when I've had the Sue Elliott on, who's the Portland with the Portland Christians with Questions founder, as we've talked a little bit about, you know, those theories. And, you know, I think one thing that I often wonder about, coming from my own background, and I've seen this expressed a few times too, is where does the concept of grace come into play? Kind of like, you know, grace being the get out of jail free card kind of thing, that, you know, we're just going to, the consciousness of the species is expanding. I guess there has to be some choice at a soul level. I mean, I do, again, I struggle with this. You know, are there souls who wouldn't want, you know, they want to keep playing games in the at what's often called the lower densities. That's another term I've heard, where, you know, the war games, so to speak, you know, the kind of games of survival we play on this planet. So anyway, this is such a complex topic. It's not something we're going to be able to cover just in this show. You know, I want to get a little bit in from the chat room. I promised the chat room I would talk about their comments, but you know what sometimes happens is we get so engaged in the talk and there's only so much time, we don't always get that element into the show. But I at least want to get a little bit in because someone has a question. The question being, hasn't there been a lot of descending masters at this time to help the ascending energies? So I was wondering if you want to take that on, Ross, or I can, either one. I'll give you a shot at it.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay.
I'm not sure about that.
Well, you know, I can say that I've certainly heard that. I mean, you've heard it said. I've certainly heard it said within what would be called New Age circles that this is a time when many masters are returning. They're either as spirit guides or they're actually incarnated on the planet, and they are helping to elevate the consciousness of humanity. I have heard that said. I have also heard it said that even extraterrestrials would fill that role. And one of the books I talked about in another show, which is kind of interesting given what you said, Ross, is it's about indigenous views of 2012, and it's called Return of the Children of Light, a rather obscure 2012 book. It's kind of gotten lost in the shuffle. It was one of the first ones that was ever even out. And this person, her name was Judith Bluestone Polich. She was a student of Don Miguel Ruiz, actually. But one of the things she said, the children of light, you know, that light energy, they are us. But they're also, there's this concept of the parental race returning, which are, you know, star beings of some sort. And she found some evidence of cultures referring to that. And I don't know if we'll have much time to get into this here, but one of the things I really remember when we did those medicine wheel ceremonies years ago, and that there is a traditional invocation that you gave. And what was so interesting is they gave a very similar invocation at the memorial service for the Congress, the people who were shot around the Congresswoman down in now I'm losing track. I think it was in Arizona, right? In Arizona. And it was interesting that there's a reference to some of this. And this whole the Father Sky, too, the Mother Earth, the Father Sky, and this notion of, you know, what comes from the sky. So maybe, even though it's a big topic, we may not be able to do it justice, you can take that on just a little bit into if you've seen anything in your studies referring to that kind of thing, and why is that part of the invocation? And I can't even remember exactly what it was that you had said about something about star brothers and sisters, something like that. Can you reflect on that?
Sure. I can just a little bit, and part of it is just, you know, my personal belief based on what science tells us now about the universe, and it seems plainly evident that there are many planets that will support life, and in fact, we don't even understand all forms of life because that can be different in a different environment. But I think it's pretty easy to accept the idea that there's extraterrestrial life living in the universe. I think even recently the Pope's I can't remember who this person was, but somebody
astronomer. Yeah.
Yes, the Pope's astronomer said, yes, well, if ETs show up, we will baptize them. So
yes,
I think
I saw that.
There's a lot going on in the world, kind of even mainstream, about ETs. But I think indigenous people have known about or been in relationship with entities or energies from the sky. They call them the sky people or the sky beings. And there's a lot of work out there, a lot of books and things you can read about this. But I think it's just part of the tradition, most indigenous, at least the ones I'm familiar with, where they acknowledge that. They, along with the rest of creation, they don't really separate that from us or separate that from the Apu or the mountain. It's that we're actually praying and giving thanks, expressing gratitude to all of the creation and to the Creator. And so there's a lot of ways to pray, and that's one. And one of them is to, as you're going through and acknowledging these various things that maybe inspire you as a human being, one thing that they often do is they include the star beings or our brothers and sisters from the sky, the sky people.
Yeah. And you know, I probably should clarify what I heard at the service in Arizona. I don't think they went that far, although it brought to mind the full invocation that you gave. But there was, I recall at the time, one of the news people, I think maybe on Fox or somewhere, was online questioning, you know, why are we having an invocation to Father Sky and Mother Earth? And boy, I did think that was insensitive, that we need to be aware that there are multiple cultural and spiritual traditions within our culture here, and that I thought it was wonderful that they had multiple groups represented there. So in any case, I thought I better clarify that I don't know that they actually went so far as to talk about, you know, the spirit brothers and sisters, star brothers and sisters, or whatever it was. But I do know that I have heard various indigenous cultures have references to that. And now there's a whole new show, which I haven't caught up with, Ancient Aliens on the History Channel. I've watched some of it. I keep meaning to catch up with it. But it seems like a really interesting show that's bringing that information forward. So, you know, there's just a lot here. We're getting some positive feedback, people reading your writing on the chat room who appreciate it. We can certainly put in the show notes for people coming into the archives some information on where they can read your writings. The only other thing I wanted to comment on, and I know we are running to the end of the show, is I am a firm believer in reincarnation. How exactly it works, I'm not sure, but I've seen enough concrete evidence of it that even though I used to not be sure that that was something I believe, now I'm just totally convinced. Now, how it operates, I can't say, but there certainly seems to be evidence of it occurring. on the planet, even, you know, photographic parallels, which I've talked about in other shows where you have groups of people with photographic parallels. And one last question, and again, we are running low on time, is one of the concepts that I've seen and reflected upon is that if there is no real concept of time, wouldn't your past lives, in a way, be parallel, in a way, be out there, accessible? I don't know if you can actually consciously access them. I do know people who claim to have done that, so I guess I shouldn't say I don't know. I mean, people are really, I mean, I can certainly speculate that it's possible. Is there really a concept of a past life, or are all your incarnations kind of in parallel in this web of time, this circle of time?
Yeah, right. I think they are, and I can, just to be brief, say that shamanically, or shamans, what shamans learn how to do and what they do for people is they actually learn how to travel along those timelines, either forward in time or backwards in time, to aid their client or to aid an individual. For example, if you've got wounds from your past lives that haven't been healed, the shaman is able to journey along those timelines and track and find those wounds and heal those wounds and shift that energy so that you're no longer informed by that heavy energy or those wounds from the past. And looking forward, we want to align people with their greatest destiny. And this is a little bit complicated, but suffice it to say that we all have destinies. We all have a future. And in fact, we have multiple futures based on choices that we make along the way. And one thing that a shaman learns how to do is to track those timelines forward in time to anchor and then bring back, if you will, energetically, a connection to the client's healing or their greatest destiny or whatever the case may be, but to track for the outcome. So if you're working with someone who's got a disease, part of the way to shift that engagement and to cure or to not cure, but to heal that is to perhaps track forward in time. And maybe you'll find when you do that, if it's a serious disease, you'll track forward and you'll find death, and you'll track again and find death, and you'll track again and you'll find death. But if you keep working and keep tracking those future timelines, you'll find one. Maybe it's in the 2% out of the 90% out of 100%, but you'll find those destiny lines that don't have that illness. And when the shaman finds that, they grab that and they bring it back and they essentially install it or anchor it into the client. It's a piece of kind of part of the healing work that how they engage with time.
That is really interesting, and I think I've heard the term soul retrieval, but you know what? We have 1 minute left. We're coming right down to the wire, so I'm going to have to bring the show to a close, and thank you, Ross, and offer an invitation for you to come back sometime since there's so much to talk about, and you know, you're certainly welcome in our chat room anytime. And I just want to say that I think, you know, you have a lot of really interesting things to share based on your experiences. And that's the purpose of this show, to bring in people from different spiritual perspectives. People can write to this show at info@frontierbeyondfear.com. Thank you, Ross. Thank you to everyone in the archive listening and those in the chat room.
Thank you, Susan. It's my pleasure.
Yeah, it's been really nice to have you on. And we will be here again next week with another show. So thank you, everyone.